The Green Hornet. He hunts the biggest of all game, public enemies who try to destroy our America. With his faithful bullet Cato, Britt Reed, daring young publisher, matches wits with the underworld, risking his life that criminals and racketeers within the law may feel its weight by the sting of the Green Hornet. Ride with Britt Reed in the thrilling adventure, The Call of Death. The Green Hornet strikes again! A heavy truck rolled along the highway in a heavy windstorm that lashed streaks of rain against the windshield. As the strong headlights showed the approach to the new steel bridge which stretched across the narrow river into the city, the driver spoke to his helper.
Hey, there's a new bridge, Ed. Won't be long now before we're in town. Get out of this storm.
Yeah. Looks like we'll have it all to ourselves. This high wind and rain sure has thinned out traffic.
It's plenty tough driving in a storm like this. Wind's almost strong enough to blow us right off the road. Well, here's the bridge.
Man alive, listen to that wind. We get the full sweep of it here on the bridge.
You said it. I'll be glad when we...
Hey, something's happening. The bridge is swaying. Step on it, quick.
We gotta get off of here. Ed, it's cracking up. We'll never make it.
We gotta make it. Push on that gas. Maybe we'll get across before it's too late.
Hang on, Ed.
Come on, keep it going.
We gotta make it.
It's cracking up all around us.
We gotta get across, Ed.
Bridge falls.
Here you are, sir.
Read all about it. Two men lost in bridge crack up.
Here you are, sir.
Cut the left street. Quick, Bob.
Later that night, Britt Reed, young publisher of the Daily Sentinel, was in the city room with Gunnigan, his city editor, and Mike Oxford.
Put this editorial in the next edition, Gunnigan.
Okay, Chief. It's sure a hot one.
What's it about, Gunnigan?
It's a demand for an immediate investigation, that's what.
I hope it has results.
But you can't blame anybody for what the wind did, Reed.
That one was very strong, Oxford. But that bridge was supposed to have been built to withstand even a hurricane. The old bridges were not affected at all by the storm. And that was a new bridge.
Golly, then you think the bridge wasn't put up right, is that it?
Well, I'll reserve my opinion until the city officials and the Bureau of Engineers have their say. The public voted in our mayor because they had confidence in him. I'm sure he'll be the first to respond to our demand for a complete investigation.
Two days later, Axford entered Britt Reed's office, where the young publisher was going over the mail with his secretary, Lenore Case.
Hi, Casey. Hiya, Reed.
What's on your mind, Axford?
Suffering snakes, Reed. You sure started something.
Oh, that was my intention, Axford. What occurred in Mitchell's office?
Well, he gave out word that he was going to personally conduct a preliminary hearing that'd be open to the press. That's why he went over.
I see.
We met at Mitchell's office. Mitchell was there.
Well, who else was there?
McLean, head of the bridge construction company, and Calvin, the bridge inspector. The mayor conducted the hearing himself and started things off as soon as we got there. And he didn't waste a bit of time getting to the point either.
Gentlemen, I'm making this preliminary hearing an open one.
so the public will know all the facts. As mayor of this city, I'm taking it upon myself to conduct this hearing. First, we shall hear from Mr. Mitchell, the city engineer. What have you to say, Mr. Mitchell?
Well, as you know, Mr. Mayor, that bridge was a toll bridge built by private interest and to be franchised by the city on condition, of course, that the finished structure pass a complete inspection by one of our municipal inspectors.
I know all that. Go on.
The city has several of its own projects underway which have taken my time and attention. The matter of that toll bridge was put into the hands of my assistant, Mr. Ludlow.
Now, you know, of course, that an investigation yesterday showed definite weaknesses of construction in that bridge, including, in some part, steel girders of inferior strength.
Yes, sir, I read the report.
Can you explain, then, why your department recommended a month ago that the franchise be given?
Of course. Mr. Ludlow sent an inspector to look over the finished bridge. The written report received from that inspector by Ludlow okayed the bridge. He showed me the report and recommended that our department approve the franchise.
Just a moment, Mr. Mayor. I'm the bridge inspector who made the report on that bridge. May I say something?
All right, Mr. Calvin, you have the floor.
I arrived here last night by plane from Florida after hearing radio reports about that bridge crashing. I was amazed to read in the papers just before I left there that the bridge had been opened to the public.
Explain that, Mr. Calvin.
Darn right I will, sir. I turned in a written report to Mr. Ludlow, as Mr. Mitchell says. But in that report, I definitely condemned that bridge as structurally weak and unsafe.
Now, just a moment, Calvin. Are you calling me a liar?
You think what you like. I'm only telling the truth.
Maybe you'll tell us why you've been in Florida.
Why not? Your assistant Ludlow suggested I use up my 6 weeks accrued leave and take a vacation.
What's this?
He said if there was to be another inspection of the bridge or anything regarding it that I should know, he'd wire me. Naturally, I went, leaving 2 days after I turned in that report. The real report carries my signature. I'd like to have you see it, Mr. Mayor. And if it is the real report, it will show that I did not okay that bridge.
Well, that's different.
I think we'd all like to have a look at that inspector's report, Mr. Mitchell.
I'm sorry, Mayor. The report was kept in Ludlow's files. I searched this morning, but Inspector Calvin's report is missing.
Where's Ludlow? Why isn't he here?
I sent him out of town last night. That was before I was notified of this hearing. He'll be back tonight.
I see. Mr. McLean.
Yes?
You head the bridge construction company. What do you have to say?
Well, Mr. Mayor, this tragedy's been a great shock to me. We have a large company, and of course I felt sure the bridge was built according to the specifications. And when Ludlow said the bridge had been approved, I took it for granted the structure was everything it should be.
Mr. Ludlow seems to have a lot of explaining to do. Now, I'll postpone this hearing until 10 o'clock tomorrow morning, when Ludlow can be on hand.
Mayor, let things rest like they are till the hearing tomorrow, Reed. It looks kind of bad for Ludlow.
Yes, it does. I'm very much interested in the explanation Ludlow will make tomorrow morning.
That evening, Brett Reed went to his apartment where Cato, his faithful Filipino valet, and the only person knowing his identity as the Green Hornet, was waiting. After dinner, Britt and Cato were in the living room when the phone rang.
Mr. Reed's apartment? Oh, it's you, Mr. Axford. Oh, just a minute. Well, Mr. Axford asked for you, Mr. Britt.
Hello, Axford. What's up? What's that? Great Scott, he did. Where did it happen? Well, I see. Are you at the Sentinel now? Well, tell Gunnigan to get out an extra. I'll be down shortly. Get a follow-up for the next edition with all details. All right. Goodbye.
What happened, Mr. Britt?
Axford says Charlie Ludlow, the man they were waiting to question, committed suicide in his office at City Hall a short time ago.
Well, that looked like proof that Ludlow to blame for faulty bridge.
It does look that way. It's certainly a big climax to the hearing.
Well, they don't have to go on with investigation now.
Well, that depends. I'm going on down to the Sentinel, Cato. I'll be back in an hour or two. I want to write an editorial for the early morning edition. Here's the editorial, Gunnigan. It's getting late, so I'm going back home.
Okay, Chief. Oh, here comes Mike Axford.
Hi, Reed. I'm glad you're still here.
I was just about to leave. Give me some of the details on Ludlow.
Well, it was a cleaning woman at City Hall who called cops headquarters. I went over with Sarge. She said she'd just come on duty and was starting to clean the corridor on the first floor. She heard the faint ringing of a phone in one of the offices down the hall, and then the faint sound of a voice answering.
I see. Go on.
Well, she paid no attention to that, of course. But about 20 minutes later, she heard a shot. She ran down the corridor, opened a couple of doors, then she opened Ludlow's.
Well?
There he was, slumped over his desk with the gun still in his hand. Then she called the cops. I guess Ludlow figured it was the only way out.
Yeah, he was afraid to face the music. Did you get to see Ludlow's wife?
Yeah, I just came from there. She's all broken up about it.
Of course, she would be.
She said he came in about 7 o'clock tonight. She told him Mitchell wanted him to call. While he was putting through a call to Mitchell's home, she started to get dinner on the table. Ludlow came back from the phone, seemed kind of upset, and told her to wait dinner till he got back, that he had to run down to his office. Then he left.
What time did the call come into headquarters?
It was about 7:30, I'd say.
I see. Of course, the guard at the front door to City Hall would have a record of when Ludlow went in.
Nope. You see, there's a side door that opens directly into the engineering department. Mitchell, Inspector Calvin, and Ludlow all have keys to it.
That's interesting.
Maybe so. Anyway, he got in, and it's a plain case of suicide. He had plenty of reason to do it, too.
Yeah, it looks that way, all right.
What about the gun, Mike? Didn't his wife see him take it from home?
She says she knows he didn't have it when he left. The cops checked, though. It was Ludlow's own gun. He had it registered. I guess he kept it in his desk.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll go along home.
Well, I'm sticking around a while. See you later, Ed.
All right. Good night.
So long.
Good night, Chief. See you in the morning.
Back earlier than I expect, Mr. Britt. It's not quite 10 o'clock yet.
I had a talk with Axford about the Ludlow case, Cato. And after hearing the details, I've done a bit of thinking.
What do you think about?
About several little facts that don't quite tie in. In the first place, just before he left for his office, Ludlow told his wife to be sure and wait dinner for him, that he'd be back. That, of course, is a very minor detail.
You think it not natural for a man who contemplates suicide to give thought to dinner, perhaps?
Well, if he were in the upset condition due to what he had just heard, it'd be more natural to say he didn't want any dinner.
Will you not think about just that point, Mr. Britt?
You're right. The important facts to me are that he arrived home at 7, made a phone call, then drove from his home in Townley Park to the City Hall.
Was that a drive of about 10 minutes?
Yes, no more than that. That should put Ludlow in his office around 7:20. The police were notified by a cleaning woman at 7:30. That means she found Ludlow dead a little before that.
Well, that's true, but I don't follow what you tried to get.
Cato, that woman must have heard that shot about 25 minutes after 7. But she said that about 20 minutes before that, she heard a phone faintly ring in the engineering department and the mumbled voice of someone answering it, presumably Ludlow.
Well, but if people are positive of time, then that's not possible.
Exactly. At the approximate time that Ludlow was phoning from his home, someone was answering a phone in the engineering department at City Hall.
Well, then you think...
I think that when Ludlow was talking on that phone at his home, he was actually talking to the person who murdered him.
We'll continue our Green Hornet adventure in just a moment. Reed said he thought Charles Ludlow talked on the phone to the person who later murdered him. Cato stood for a moment without speaking. Then, when the meaning of Britt's remark struck him, he said,
"Then you think Ludlow not commit suicide?"
"That's exactly what I think, Cato. I believe he was murdered to keep him from testifying at the hearing, and to make the police think Ludlow was to blame for allowing a franchise to be issued."
"Well, that's very possible, Mr. Britt."
"Before I draw any definite conclusions, I'd like to do a little personal investigating."
"You mean you go out as Green Hornet, perhaps?"
"Yes. We'll leave right now. Come on.
Will you not say where we go, Mr. Britt?
I'm anxious to pay a visit to Mitchell, the city engineer, Cato.
Then you think he killed Ludlow, perhaps?
In my opinion, he's the logical one. He sent Ludlow out of town last night. That could have been because he got wind of the mayor's decision to have a preliminary hearing today.
Well, that true?
He left word for Ludlow to phone him as soon as he came home tonight. We all took it for granted that Ludlow called Mitchell at his home. But if he had phoned there and didn't receive an answer, well, he'd logically try the office.
But then Mitchell tell him to come to office right away, and Ludlow go, not knowing Mitchell wait to kill him with own gun.
That's right. You see, it's all very possible. Mitchell has a key to the side door, and as head of the department, he was in a position to cover up concerning the reports, provided Ludlow were out of the way. We'll stop in the shadows just ahead. Mitchell lives just beyond. I'll have to do some bluffing, but let's hope I get results. Come on.
That same night, Mr. Mitchell was alone in a small office at the rear of his home. He was busy at the desk going over some papers. Suddenly, he looked up, startled.
What is it?
Take a closer look, Mitchell. Then you'll know me the next time.
That mask. He must be the Green Hornet.
That's right. I've come to have a talk with you.
I warn you, Hornet, the police will hear of this.
I wouldn't be a bit surprised.
Why have you forced your way in here? I have nothing that you'd want.
Maybe you have certain papers you took from Ludlow's files.
Ridiculous. Why should I remove papers from his files?
For two reasons. One, to cast definite suspicion on him as the person responsible for putting through an okay on that bridge.
His suicide proves he was responsible.
And second, you wanted to remove the copies of the true report, so the originals you changed and sent to McLean would stand to protect him and his company.
You'd have no way of knowing whether the copies matched the originals unless you, acting for Ludlow, stole them from his files before the hearing.
You have those copies, Mitchell. I want them.
And as I see it, now that Ludlow's dead and can't pay you off, you hope to force money from me for some reason or other.
You can never buy your way out of the fix you're going to be in, Mitchell. You killed Ludlow.
Ludlow committed suicide. Why are you so sure he was murdered? Maybe he's
you. Stop bluffing. You called his home and left word for him to phone you. He did phone you at the office. You told him to come right down. Then you killed him and planted his own gun on him.
No, I swear that's not true. I told George Calvin to leave word for Ludlow to phone me, and I...
All right, answer that, but be careful.
Hello.
It's George Calvin, Mr. Mitchell. I called to find out if you had definite word that the hearing is off for tomorrow.
Yes, I went to a conference at the mayor's home at 7 o'clock tonight. He assured me that...
Is that the truth?
Hello, what's the matter?
Answer me. Is that true?
Yes, of course it's true.
You sound upset. Is something wrong?
Calvin, phone the police. The Hornet's here saying Ludlow was murdered and the port stolen and all that. Tell them that... Hello? Well, he hung up. But you send the police, Hornet. If you think you're going to...
Put down that gun.
Oh, my wrist.
Drop it. Right now, I don't know which is the bigger fool, Mitchell. You or I. I'll see you again sometime.
Oh, wait, I said.
Get going, Gino. Hurry. Where we go?
Parkland Apartments. Step on it.
Why we go there?
To catch Ludlow's killer, if we're not too late. Hurry.
The long, sleek black beauty sped like a gleaming black arrow through the dark streets until finally it slowed to a smooth stop at a point from which Britt and Cato could watch the entrance to the Park Line Apartments.
Who we watch for, Mr. Britt?
The bridge inspector, George Calvin.
And Mitchell, not murderer?
No. I was thrown off the track because of that phone call. I thought it was Mitchell who received that call in the office. But it couldn't have been he. Mitchell was at the mayor's home at the time. Ludlow phoned the office expecting to talk to Mitchell. He talked to Inspector Calvin instead.
What make you so sure?
Mitchell, Ludlow, and Calvin were the only ones having a key to that side door. Also, Calvin was told by Mitchell on the phone that the Hornet claimed Ludlow was murdered and his report stolen. Calvin hung up in a hurry.
You think he tried to make a getaway?
Yes, that's why we're here.
Well, Mr. Britt.
Yes, Cato?
How did Killer know Ludlow would phone office?
He didn't know. But one thing he did know was that Ludlow was to phone Mitchell when he got back in the city.
Oh, then Killer figured that when Mitchell tell Ludlow that he in big mess and the report's missing from Ludlow's file, then Ludlow rushed right down to office. So Killer went there and waited.
Right. And when Ludlow didn't contact Mitchell at his home, he phoned the office. Calvin told him about the mess. Ludlow did rush to his office where Calvin killed him and made it seem like suicide. The whole
thing... Someone come from apartment house and go to car.
That was Calvin. Come on, Cato. Follow him.
He go into house down the street, Mr. Britt?
Yes. I expected him to pay such a visit, Cato. Come on.
Well, maybe it's a mistake not to have taken Calvin's briefcase from him before he get here. It perhaps contained missing copies of report.
No, Cato, he wouldn't be that foolish. If he did take them, he would have destroyed them by now. In fact, that's probably what brought him here.
Well, I don't understand.
You'll soon know what I mean. Here's the house. We'll walk toward the back.
Well, look, Mr. Britt, through half-open window, Calvin talking to someone.
We'll get close enough to hear what they're saying. Come on.
Well, neither one of them facing window.
That's good. This is close enough.
Of course, I burned the copy as soon as I got my hands on it. I want your copy, McLean.
I'm sorry. I have to protect myself, you know. I'm keeping that copy. You might as well forget it. Go back to Florida. The affair may blow over. The Haunted won't dare go to the police.
Nothing doing. I'm taking that briefcase.
Put down that gun, you fool.
I'm getting that copy to destroy it.
I won't let you have it.
And I'll use this gun on you and take it. Ooh, my arm!
Don't move, either of you.
It's he, the Green Hornet.
That's right. And I'll take that briefcase.
Hey, McLean, don't let him.
He won't get it.
Oh, yes, I will.
Hey, the Hornet, maybe we can get together on this.
Take a little
maybe...
gas,
no. What do we do now?
Well, I search Calvin's coat pocket. You open McLean's briefcase. Oh, a bank book. Here's a deposit made almost a month ago. $20,000 to Calvin's account.
And here, copy of missing report. It's signed by Inspector Calvin at an OK bridge.
I thought so. He was paid off to OK that faulty bridge. Probably by McLean.
Well, now what we do?
We'll take Calvin to the Black Beauty. We'll leave him at the door of police headquarters. I'll leave that report and a note telling the police to check the phone call Ludlow made early tonight. That'll start the police on the same train of thought I followed. They know only Mitchell, Calvin, and Ludlow had keys to get into their department. Now, come on, let's go.
The following morning, Britt Reed and Axford attended a special press conference at the mayor's office.
Gentlemen, wait a minute. Gentlemen, I have a very startling announcement to make. During the night, I received certain news from police headquarters, which I requested they withhold from the press until I could meet with you and give the facts. Now, don't rush for the phones until I finish, and you'll all have your chance.
So what is the news, Mayor? Something new on the Ludlow case?
I'll try to be brief. Inspector Calvin claimed his reports condemned that bridge. But it has been proved that he definitely okayed it and took a bribe to do so.
What about Ludlow, Mr. Mayor? Was he in on it?
Not at all. And he did not commit suicide.
Have the police a line on the killer, Mr. Mayor?
Yes, Mr. Reed. The police have the murderer already in custody. Inspector Calvin killed Ludlow.
Wait till I get my hands on Sergeant Burke for not tipping me off.
This is everybody's news this time, Axford. Forget the scoop.
And, gentlemen, as Mr. Mitchell can tell you, the Green Hornet was mixed up in the case.
Well, that's right. The Hornet came to my place last night and blamed me for the murder. Then he got to Calvin. Probably tried to get part of the bribe and failed. So he double-crossed him and left him at police headquarters.
When the police faced Calvin with certain facts, and after a strenuous grilling, he broke and gave him the whole story. He named McLean as the man who gave the bribe.
Holy crow.
Didn't Calvin take a big chance of the deal coming to light, Mayor?
No. He took the money after McLean found out he was going to condemn the bridge. And he okayed it, went to Florida, thinking the bridge would hold up under the ordinary wear and tear of traffic. But he didn't reckon with the elements, such as that big windstorm. He rushed back, knowing if he didn't cover up, he'd be blamed.
Oh, if the Hornet went to Mr. Mitchell before the police had the facts against Calvin, how do you suppose he knew Ludlow had been murdered?
Mr. Reed, that's something neither you nor I will ever know. Okay, gentlemen. On your papers now. You've got a murder story to headline.
Give me that phone, Mayor. I ain't got a scoop yet.
Oh, Scoop Expert's at it again.
Oh.
Houston bridge crash. Green Hornet involved. Read all about it. Green Hornet still in charge. Set the next speed. Let's go.
These copyrighted dramas originate in the studios of WXYZ Detroit, and all characters, names, places, and incidents used are fictitious. Al Neal speaking. This is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.